Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and you join me for episode 278, and this episode is the post-Ignite roundup. Now, to kick off what's happened at Ignite, there's so much in there. I would suggest that a great place to start is the Book of News. So basically, this is a site you can go to, and it will show you all the announcements from all the products and give you links to go and do further investigation. Now, I'll include all the links that I mentioned in the show notes so you too can go and have a look. But really, there is just so much there that we can't cover it in the time that we're given. So my advice to you is use the Book of News as your starting place to go through and have a look at what you feel is the most relevant for yourself. Now, as a general rule of thumb, I would suggest a good approach with this is to watch all the keynotes. There's probably usually about a dozen or so major keynotes from each of the different products, and go and have a look at those and then break out from those. And remember, all of these sessions are recorded. They're up at myignite.microsoft.com. You can go in, you can review them, have a look at them. The great thing about the recordings is you can watch them at double speed or a faster rate, which allows you to get through this quick. So that's my tactic, is to work out what I want to have a look at using the Book of News, watch the keynotes, and then again pick out the important topics, and then go and find those individual videos and work through them to get all the material. Now, probably the most exciting announcement, I think, especially for the SMB, is the introduction of Microsoft Defender for Business. So Microsoft recently announced that it would be creating a P1 and a P2 plan of Defender. Now we're getting a completely new offering called Microsoft Defender for Business. Now, the best news about this is it will be included for free in Microsoft 365 Business Premium. So this is going to Microsoft, you know, AV, EDR, XDR style security solution that's going to be included for free into Microsoft 365 Business Premium. This is what a lot of people have been waiting for, to really lift that security up to, you know, really enterprise grade. Now, Microsoft tell us that the product will come in preview shortly, so probably expecting mid-December for that, and then it will go GA probably in the new year. So there is an upcoming webinar for partners on the 18th. You'll find that in a link that I'll put in the show notes for you. So again, if you want to learn more about, you know, Defender for Business, and if you are familiar with Defender for Endpoint, it's just, again, a limited set of features, but quite extensive, that will be available. So go in and have a look at that. So again, the most exciting announcement for me was the introduction and the inclusion of Microsoft Defender for Business, which is great news. Now, there are also lots of news around Windows 365, and one of the major ones was the ability to have the integration or to start using Windows 11 and some more advanced admin capabilities. So we can now have Windows 11 cloud PCs, and we can also go in as an administrator, and we can also choose what level our users will be. So whether they want to be, you know, a admin or not, we can go in and we can control and select that. So again, if you haven't looked at what Windows 365, this is typically the business offering here I'm talking about. There are plenty of announcements around enterprise as well, but in business, again, we're seeing, you know, more capabilities, being more licenses and things improved. So go in, have a look at that. If you haven't, again, already done that. So what we're seeing is with Windows 365 for Business, especially, we're seeing Windows 11 support, enhanced admin capabilities, and also the integration with that Microsoft 365 Lighthouse for multi-tenant management. Now, another announcement, which is sort of probably not Ignite, but was around there, I thought I'd throw in. This is something that a lot of people have been asking for a long time. This is now, you now have the capability to change the SharePoint domain name. Now, it is in preview, and I'll put the link in show notes so you can go in and have a look. But typically, your SharePoint URL in Microsoft 365 is going to be the tenantname.sharepoint.com, and that has been pretty well fixed from the point that you spin up your tenant. And that has been a limitation in this age when we're getting, you know, companies are merging and maybe changing and rebranding. We want that capability. So that has been now become available in preview. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can now go in and rename your SharePoint domain if you want. Now, as I mentioned, the great place to start is the Book of News and then look at the keynotes. Now, after the keynotes, there probably are a number of, you know, summary blogs that I've tried to capture for you, put in the show notes so that you can go in and have a look for yourself. And I'll speak about some of these here just to give you a rundown of some of the features. So again, lots and lots of stuff being added to SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams, and so on. We're also getting the ability in OneDrive to have quick access. So think of this like the ability to pin a favorite in Windows Explorer. So on the navigation on the left-hand side in our OneDrive for Business on the web, we can go in and we can pin a favorite to make it easy to go and access. We've also got the capability to move the Add to OneDrive link into folders. This is really handy. So you could create a folder and then you could have all the Add to OneDrive links in there in that location rather than having them at the root. So again, it's going to give extra flexibility. So I think that's going to be a real positive as well. We've also got an improved sharing experience. You'll see that rolling out. So the sharing experience has been improved there. You should start seeing that already. We've also got video transcriptions. I'm seeing that in my tenant as well. So if you do record a meeting, that will be transcribed and the transcription will be made available to you after the fact along with the recording. Another big advantage we've seen, or something that's been added to lists a lot of people have been asking for, is the ability to have a board view. So to view our lists as cards, like boards, make it easier to work with. We've also got a rich text editor for our lists as well, so we can change the font, we can change the color, do all that sort of customizations as well. We've also got lists for Android in public preview if you want to go and sign up to that. Now, it's interesting, they've also included the ability to sync lists offline. Now, apparently this is going to be automatically enabled with your OneDrive for Business when it rolls out to the environment. I haven't seen it as yet in mine, but again, the article indicates that effectively you'll now be able to take all your lists offline and sync them as you do your files. So that's going to be nice and convenient. Now, at the front of everything, office.com is also getting a refresh and update. So this is the main page where all the information for a user is typically home. So make it much easier to find all that experience there. We've also got new templates that have been added to things like Teams and documents and so on. So lots of great starting points for there. We've also got improved page capabilities in SharePoint. We've also got, like I said, the advanced or the added templates you can use for your Teams as well. Now, there are also lots of admin improvements as well in the environment. So a lot of stuff around Mac too. So if you're in the Mac space, a lot of stuff for you around adding sync and managing that and doing all those sort of things and managing Teams and whatnot, migrations, all that sort of good stuff has been added here. There's just so much to get through. So I encourage you to have a look at the show notes that I put up to go through that. Now, not to be outdone, the Power Platform also announced a huge raft of improvements, additions. Again, too many to go through here. I'll give you a link to the article I recommend you go and work through. But probably the biggest change is around the licensing. They're moving to a consumption-based license. You only pay for what you use, like a very, an Azure approach to licensing here. That should simplify things a great deal. So it's the Power Apps pay-as-you-go with an Azure subscription in there. Go in and have a look at that. That, I think, will remove a lot of the confusion about, you know, people who want to consume the apps more than create them. There's also the ability to, you know, do investigation to see whether there's any inefficiencies in your Power Automate workflows. lots more data insights and integration. We've also got the ability now to have native Power Apps on our mobile devices. So rather than having to go through a client app like Power Apps and launch your custom app, you can now launch the custom app, can appear as a normal app directly on the device. So it's moving more and more to, you know, being like a standalone development environment where the user has no real idea that it is actually using the Power Platform underneath. So if you're interested in doing that and rolling out custom apps to a very wide audience, those updates and articles are worth your time. Now, another one that Microsoft has introduced is this product called Loop. So it would seem to me that it's sort of a development of the Fluid framework. Probably best if you have a look at the video on the link that I provide. Go and have a look at it. Think of it like being able to, you know, embed work across different services. So if you're working in email, you can also embed that capability to update information into Teams, into a SharePoint document. And then, you know, if others have access to it, then they can update that as well. So it's sort of this concept of collaboration on a single entity, let's call it, that can be embedded in all of the services in Microsoft 365. It's a very different way of working, and we'll see how that works with, you know, people who are probably, you know, traditionally opening and closing documents mainly. But it's worthwhile having a look, and it's going to be rolled out. I think it'll take a little bit of getting used to, but it certainly has benefits when you can edit and work with a document in a single location. Now, another really big one for me was the release of the Q&A app inside Teams. So this is question and answers embedded into Teams. You can add that right now. I started playing with it myself. So what you find is when you have a meeting or when you're doing presentation, you have general chat, it can be very noisy if you do have people who aren't necessarily asking questions but greeting each other and so on. Separating that out into a dedicated Q&A area that can be better managed and sequenced is a really handy thing. So again, this is included free. You can add it into any Teams meeting. Recommend that you go and do that. So go in and have a look at the new Q&A app from Microsoft. Now, probably the biggest, the one that generated the most interest for me to go and have a think about, Microsoft, you would say, is joining the metaverse. So it is basically releasing what it's calling Mesh for Teams. And the idea is, and again, the video is probably the best way to look at this, it's an avatar-based virtual environment that you can go and have meetings in. Rather than it being, you know, a camera on, you can have an avatar, a virtual persona, and you can then have meetings and whatnot, drawn whiteboards and so on. It's interesting here. It is around the very, very popular at the moment, all this concept of the metaverse. So let's see how it works in the commercial arrangement. Coming in 2022, I'd advise you to go again and have a look at the video and help you understand what it is and the concept. It'll be interesting to see how well this is adopted inside the enterprise. There are obviously some big enterprise clients that are using it, that have backed this, but we will see. So looking forward to getting the previews early in the new year. Go in and have a look at this and see where it sort of fits in your organization here. I think it will have, and it certainly is the trend at the moment, but in a corporate environment, we'll have to wait and see how successful it is. But I certainly, again, recommend you go and have a look and make sure you're across this. There are the ability now to have specific devices. For example, you can put your come into an office, put your phone on this device, and it will allow you to run Teams quite easily on a large screen. We've got that capability. They've added additional features around webinars for presenters to make it, you know, more like a news report and so on. We've also got this other concept here of shared channels. So the shared channels is what they're calling sort of Teams Connect. The idea is this is going to be an easier way to share with people outside the organization. Again, I haven't seen that come to any of my tenants as yet. Really waiting to try this out and see how it works. It will allow you, for example, to be part of an external channel in another Teams environment, but view it inside your own client without having to jump and change tenants. So let's hope that Microsoft can deploy this successfully and allow people to work across multiple teams. This is especially relevant for SMB, I would suggest. So Watch out for this Teams Connect concept. Should be out again in a very short period of time to allow this external access as well. So lots more apps being added to the Teams environment apart from the ones that I have mentioned. There's also going to be a Teams app store, so that is now moving to, you know, a size where these apps are becoming quite significant. So go in there and have a look at that. Lots of new Teams devices as well that are available for you, plus admin capabilities and so on. So there's a huge amount of information in there. Now, that's really all I've got time to run across for you. Again, the links for those will be in the show notes, so you can go in and review them, have a look. But if you really want to know, like I said, the book of news, then look at the keynotes and then start drilling in from there. I'll cover anything else that I find over time as I work through all the material, post it up on the next podcast. So with that, I think it's about time to get into our interview. But before that, as always, please don't hesitate to send me any feedback, reach out and contact me. You can do that on the emails director@ciaops.com, also on the Twitter @directorcia. So without further ado, let's get into the interview for this podcast. Welcome along to our interview for this episode. I'm joined by Phil Meyer from Microsoft. Welcome, Phil.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, Rob. Nice to be here.
It's been a while, and it's someone that I have wanted to get onto the podcast to discuss everything Microsoft. But before we do that, why don't you give our listeners a bit of an idea of your journey and what your current role is inside Microsoft?
Wow, that's a good opening question. My journey, it's a long one at Microsoft. Anyway, 42 years in the IT industry, just over 30 of which have been at Microsoft. Joined as a product manager for a product called OS2 and LAN manager, and have enjoyed the journey through campaigning for Internet Explorer and then on the SPLR and hosting journey back in 2000. And more recently, it's been very much around helping our partner community around that cloud journey and every aspect of it, whether it's Azure or Microsoft 365 or Dynamics.
So probably that's a good place to start, because having that experience and seeing the change that has happened and the change that is continuing, can you maybe give us an idea of, you know, what are the, you know, successful partners doing? Is there something that differentiates them from those who aren't? You know, in your travels there, is, you know, the partners who are getting the most out of this relationship, or getting the most out of the transition and the move to the cloud, utilizing Microsoft's technology, what are they doing differently?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it actually goes back to the very early days of joining. We started a program called Integration Centers. I don't know if anybody's on the line from those days. Some of the brands don't exist, but the people do. What were they doing that set them apart? They were integrating. They were providing services above and beyond the product. And so they got great recognition from our management teams back then. That became the partner network and the solution provider program. You might remember the old solution provider program, Robert. And now we know that we've got many different, dare I say, complex partnership relationships with us. And many of them are moving towards the recognition of service rather than the recognition of selling.
So part of this also, I think, is that one of the challenges that many partners do have is that they now see potentially, you know, a lot more channels in which information is now coming at them from Microsoft, from vendors, from their customers, social media, and so on. One of the big challenges I think they have is, okay, what's the best place, or where should I be paying attention to? Can you maybe give those partners who are a bit lost out there as to, you know, if there's one channel, or there's, you know, what will be the main channels they should be paying attention to on a very regular basis?
Yeah, and frankly, I think we could do a better job on that point as a Microsoft person. There are many, many sources of information depending on your particular interest area. As you know, there are many technologies from Microsoft, and each of those dare I say, silos will have their own communications. But to bring that all together, to try and give our partners a point of contact with us, it would be Partner Center. So partner.microsoft.com and then the dashboard Partner Center. And through that, they're able to raise trouble tickets. If they get into trouble, they can see the incentives that they're eligible to for delivering of those services, as well as the transactional elements too. They can even register deal opportunities with us through DealReg and Craft Solutions. There's a lot within that. But even in that context, there's a lot of events that run, a lot of training that runs. And maybe I can jump straight to the thing, something I might summarize with, which is, you know, join the monthly call that I run. You do that simply by sending me an email, fill me, I didn't get to choose that alias, PHILME at Microsoft.com. And I do my best each month to summarize changes around licensing, bring you a particular business focused topic or programmatic focused topic, let you know of the different news and events that have been occurring in the last 30 days, as well as give a taste of some of the programmatic things around our partnership opportunities, and concluding with a few hints and tips at a technical level. So yeah, maybe you want to do that, is attend my monthly online meeting by going to that, just sending me a quick email. The other element would be, and I'll encourage you to look at, is a colleague of mine, Dean, who runs Dean's DataBits. And he does a similar good job of summarizing each month into a collection across licensing, across events. He has a particular focus around data and AI. He's a passionate data and AI guy, and so on. So long answer to your question, Robert, but I think the simple thing might be for them to email me and ask to be part of that regular communication. Gives them, tries to consolidate everything that's going on in the market from Microsoft.
All right, well, I'll make sure that that email address is in the show notes for people to refer to. And again, take that opportunity. I would encourage you to reach out and get on that list so that you can avail yourself of that information. Now, one of the items you mentioned there is your speaking about the changes and also what's happening in the space, and probably the biggest impact or the biggest change that is coming for the resellers is going to be that change in March around the Microsoft 365 Office 365 offering. Do you want to maybe just give us a brief overview of what that change is and how it differs from what we are in today?
Not really.
Well, unfortunately, this is the part of the show where we do need to, give people, you know, the full information. That's what we do here on the Need to Know podcast.
It's a tough topic, I know. And I've had the opportunity over the last few weeks to talk to a number of partners. And there is some frustration, anger about these changes that are coming. They are substantial changes. So maybe I'll start with the, where do you want me to start? With the why of the changes or the how of the change?
No, I think the best idea here is, I think it's much easier when people understand why the change is, that sort of side of it, and then we go from there.
All right, so I'll start with the why. So the why of the change that's coming is largely on the back of the feedback we got from significant numbers of partners around the globe around churn. They were finding under the current commerce model that they would set up a set of services, they build out a proposal to a client, it would include over time the recovery of their efforts in implementation around Microsoft 365 or Dynamics or Power Platform, they would recover that money over time. But under the current model, a customer could say, well, thanks for that, but I'm going to go to this other guy for a better price. And they've undercut somehow. And all of that work that that partner's put in with the expectation that they would recover their investment, the partner's investment, their partner's effort up front, is lost as they've been able to so simply churn to change to another partner that comes in with some shiny new toy or comes in with a lower price. So churn has been one of those elements that has necessitated the how. Now, would you like me to talk about the how or the what it is?
Probably best to give people an understanding of exactly what it's all about.
Okay. So come March, what has been perceived in Microsoft 365 as a monthly model, you sign them up for annual, will no longer be something that they can churn out of. If you sell them a Microsoft 365 subscription on an annual basis, they are required by payment to commit to that year. They can still pay per month, but they are required, if they decide 6 months in, 9 months in, to leave you as the partner or to reduce the number of seats, they are required to pay out the contract for that term. So that's the first and probably most significant change, is that come cancellation, the cancellation now requires the payout of the term. They can't change to another partner. They can't reduce the number of seats. They've made a commitment to it. Now, the other change that's come is that there is now a new monthly term, and it's truly a monthly term. So that when there's only 10 users and you think it's going to be 20 next month, but it might be 5 the month after that, you're probably better off recommending to that client that they sign up for a true monthly subscription. Now, the impact of a monthly subscription, like many things in the world where flexibility is introduced, like airfares, there is a higher price for that, in the order of 20% higher price for having that flexibility of true monthly ins and outs. So that's the other significant thing. So to summarize, the annual term is truly an annual term. There is a monthly term with a slightly higher price. And if a client wishes to cancel after purchasing with you, they have 72 hours to cancel without any significant impact. There's a proration, but we won't get into that. And if their contract comes to an end, they have 72 hours to let you know they no longer want that term. Now, there's some other things to make that a little easier for you called auto-renew off. So if you know the customer is going to leave you at the end of the term, you can turn that to off, and so the billing will not commence. Can I continue? Because there's another little one.
I think that we're all ears.
All right. Well, there's another little feature that we've introduced, is this concept of pause. Now, some of you might know that there's this concept of suspend. But with suspend, the users are still pretty much able to access their systems and keep working. Where with pause, access to the systems is now blocked except for administrators. So they will not be able to do their email. They won't be able to access their Teams. They won't be able to access their OneDrive. They won't be able to do their Business Central until it is unpaused. But during the period of pause, they're still being billed. That's to help you make a client aware they need to pay you. So there's nothing more compelling than when you've lost access to a service because you haven't paid a bill, you're going to probably run around and go and pay that bill, right? So that's the pause model. I've talked about cancellation and terms, and I've also talked about auto-renew. There's one last element, which is trials, but you might have some other things you'd like me to talk to, Robert, rather than going on to trials.
Well, I think the thing is that for a lot of people, you know, hopefully this is not too much of a surprise, but again, the main takeaways firstly are the change is coming in March, and it is basically going to be around this concept of longer terms. And I think perhaps where some of the frustration may arise when you look at this initially is that, okay, as a reseller, my initial billing model has been to my customer, you know, by month. And that's the way they've been comfortable. That's the way I've been doing it. And that's great. That provides ultimate flexibility like you see in many things. But that obviously now needs to be rethought and maybe replanned to look at a longer term contract style, as you mentioned, but paid in those similar, regular amounts. Now, this sort of approach is not unprecedented. We see this very commonly with mobile phone contracts. It's exactly the same sort of concept, really, that everybody should be familiar with is, I go and buy a phone and I'm going to basically have a plan for 2 to 3 years. Part of that contract is paying off the phone price over a regular period. If I do cancel, then I need to, pay that out and make adjustments and so on. So this really shouldn't be, I don't think, a surprise method change. I think what it is that perhaps a lot of people are frustrated that they're going to have to change their model to suit this. But as always in the IT industry, we know that it's all about change. So for those people that you've talked to or those partners that are providing you feedback, are they on board with this? How are you finding once they understand what the changes are and the reasons? Are you finding that, they're able to, okay, I've got to make an adjustment and go away? Is that what you're finding?
I'm finding a mix. I'm finding some partners are very frustrated with this. More often than not, they are those that are what I'd call more of a transactional partner rather than a full service partner. So they'd been potentially those who had been doing the churn themselves, churning other people and being churned in their own right. And just one small point, if I may, we've always had an annual. It's just that there hasn't been an enforcement model. So it's been perceived as monthly because of the billing cycle. But those partners, so back to your question, those partners that truly have been offering a fuller service model, security assessments, network assessments, training services, having a deep and long-term relationship with the client, they don't see a problem with this. This is kind of business as usual, and in some respects, it protects them more from somebody else coming and attacking their customer and trying to churn them out of that relationship.
And that's sort of my read of the situation too. You do have, different levels of partners and different focus, but I think that, we've always had people who are more interested in the transaction in basically adding a margin to a standard product, be it a printer cartridge, be it a PC or whatever, and trying to make revenue off of that. But that's really going down the consumer, consumerization path. And the only people that really do well with that model are the largest of the largest, the Amazons, the Coles, the Woolies, the really big companies that can get that scale. That model really is not going to work the smaller you are. So, again, I think that encouraging, let's call it, people to move to that deeper commitment, as you said, is a way, and it will frustrate people who have been doing this, consumerization or this transactional model, as you said, but probably in the long run, it is a much better bet for the ecosystem, for the customer, because really it's not about buying the technology, it's about getting the most out of it inside their business. And that really is where the partner should shine to help the customer achieve that, because the customer does not have those skills. Anybody really can buy Microsoft 365 or the licenses, but you really need an expert or someone who's going to invest the time to get the result for the customer and get the impact in their business. So yeah, I can certainly understand that frustration from people, but I think, like I said, I think it's a good thing.
Now, Robert, if I may, I digress with an analogy if I could. You're a Beecroft man like me. Mm-hmm. You've probably been down the arcade mm-hmm. and you've seen those little restaurants like Siam Society and Yo Sushi, right? There's no way I could do Japanese food or Thai food as good as those guys. And I'm willing to pay a premium. I know the ingredients don't cost what I'm paying for that service and that meal, but I'm willing to pay it because it comes out really well. So the analogy I'm trying to draw here is that we see the partners being more like a restaurant. Rather than walking up the street to Woolies, which is just up the corner, where you buy the bits and bobs, and there's really, I could go to Woolies, I could go to Coles, or I could go to any other IGA. We don't want the partners to be like that anymore. We want the partners to be more like Science Society and Yo Sushi, where we get good service, it's all presented, somebody brings it to us, and I'm willing to pay, as a customer, willing to pay a premium for a better quality of service so I can focus on entertaining my friends, and sitting with my wife and having a conversation rather than all the other distractions. So it's a restaurant analogy. That's where we see our partners being as their future.
Yeah, my analogy that I talk to people about is the car analogy. You know, you can have a car that, you know, achieves the same end, gets you from point A to point B, but it's not a homogenous market. Basically, you look out on the road, they're all different sorts of cars. You know, some are SUVs, some are sports cars, some are family cars, some are, you know, all different sorts because, you know, they're appealing to that demographic, and that's the whole idea. That's, we've got that variety. And I think the successful car manufacturers are the ones who really focus on the demographic and solve the problems for that and say, look, you know, you're not in our demographic. We're probably not the best fit for you. We're not going to prevent you, but this is what we're really aiming at. And I think, again, the analogy is the smaller you are, the more focused you need to be and really take an approach of saying, you know, what can I do better than anybody else for this particular market? So that really should be the focus.
Yeah. And indeed, you know, it's not that when we go to these restaurants, do I get to choose Japanese, Thai, Indian, Italian? They specialize. They're really good at Thai. They're really good at Japanese. Positano is really good at Italian. And you go to them because they're really good at that function. So again, with your car analogy, absolutely right. I need an SUV for doing this particular function because I'm going a little bit cross country. But I'm driving on the roads a lot, and I need something smaller and tighter for parking and more economical, then you go and get yourself a small sedan or a hatchback.
Yeah, and I think that's part of this is in, and you know, we do see it, and if anything of recent times has shown us the change, is that we have to adapt. We just don't know what's coming. And successful businesses and individuals are people who adapt and say, look, you know, these are the factors I can control. These are the factors I can't control. I'm going to focus making an impact on what I can rather than railing against potentially something that I can't. And, you know, we've got many instances of, you know, people who do, you know, do very well. So again, let's take the phone analogy here. Yes, you can buy an Android for probably half the price of what an Apple device is, but people still line up out the door and pay exorbitant amounts of pricing for the Apple products. And part of that, yes, I admit, is an emotional, but if you look at its core, it's very successful the way that they've been able to do that. So there is that opportunity. I think it comes down to the willingness of the business to, you know, invest and learn and adjust and adapt. And that is going to take some time and some effort. But the analogy I tell people is, well, if you're willing to do it and you invest the time, few others are, so you're going to be the one that benefits. So I think it comes down to not being afraid of doing a little bit of work to adjust to the change, and it's probably going to put you out in front of many of the peers who are still, you know, not willing to make that or invest that sort of time. Is that sort of the way that you see it, or that you see that it's going to go?
Change is the only constant. And you know who said that? Heraclitus, 500 BC. Even back then, they were seeing change. And we continue to see change. And another quote is, change is a challenge. We have to accept that that's the case. We've had to live with change in the last 2 years, and we've adapted. Sorry, I'm picking up some of my favourite, I love history. You know, Darwin, it wasn't about strongest survives, it's the most adaptable survives. And I think that in this case, the partner community has got to be the most adaptable to survive.
And I think maybe part of this is, you know, if you step back and maybe look at this, would you suggest, or would you, I seem to believe that perhaps being a partner or being an IT reseller has been too easy. You know, you really haven't had to, you know, do a hell of a lot. A lot of the times you could buy from a distri, add a markup and resell, and there wasn't necessarily that deep need to really go deep on the product. You could sell quite a range, put a significant markup. I'm back in the good old days. We're talking 30, 40% markup on some products. But now, because there is such, you know, the offerings very, very different, that transition needs to be made.
It's an interesting one, the idea that, I certainly lived through heady days with the PCs, the heady days of mini computers, in fact, the heady days of client server and the internet and the sale of various different router products that created businesses out there based on the fact that we needed a new type of protocol to support the internet. Yeah, possibly. The cloud, as I often say to people, cloud isn't just about a data center. Cloud is a new business model. And it is becoming more competitive as we've responded to customer requirements for changing that upfront cost to something that they pay as they go. They want that flexibility. And that's necessitated change, which hasn't necessarily been palatable to those who used to sell the router and the switch and the server with an upfront margin. So was it easy? I don't know. It was still pretty competitive.
It's interesting because, again, you know, perhaps we've got more people in the market. There are not only the resellers, there are the big brands, there are the department stores, there's the online capability because they've been able to apply scale and their supply chain benefits, which, you know, the consumer has changed too, because I think in a certain area of product, price is far more important than, you know, anything else. So if we look at commodity products that are out there, really people are chasing, you know, generally the cheapest price for the same product. But on the other side, there certainly is this willingness to spend, you know, on the luxury items or the unique items. So I think part of that is that you need to, again, assess what market you're in and what really works best. And the smaller you are, consumerization or, you know, that broad spectrum is probably not where you want to be. You want to be specialized and have that unique skill that you can go to market with, I would suggest. And that largely, I think, you know, the licensing or the cost of the product sort of disappears into the background, I would suggest.
Yeah, look, I think if we were talking big end of town, the buyers at the big end of town, you know, the big banks, the miners, the retailers are getting smarter in their buying, and they are indeed investing in people to run and continue to invest in people to run those systems internally. Although I did read a report from McKinsey & Co. this morning that talked about even at that end of the town, they're looking for partners to come and do some work. At the little end of town, the smaller businesses, customers, don't have that savvy. They don't have the ability to go and invest in skills that understand artificial intelligence and IoT and all these things that enable them to be a modern business. So indeed, a partner who's got skills in IoT or AI or edge computing or change management or Thai or Indian or Japanese, to think about specialties and restaurant analogies, will have a role to play in helping those smaller businesses who seek to be competitive.
All right. So, let's digest that. So, let's put some practical steps in place here. So, Hopefully, now people are more aware of the changes that are coming. We've got 6 months or so until they are, fully in market. Hopefully, if you're listening along and digesting this, you are now aware of this. But there is a, you know, 6 month period here where you can start, you know, looking at the impact to the business and your business model and what you can do and how you can work with these changes and put them to your benefit. From your point of view, Phil, and what you've seen there, what would your recommendations be for partners to start addressing now so that they are ready to hit the ground running when these changes are enacted?
Gee, you ask good questions, Robin. How many episodes have you done now? 276?
These
questions.
they continue on. And again, remember, you did take the oath as we began recording. So you are under the need to know.
No, this is good. No, it's a great question. And I would also like to answer that by highlighting that not only are those term changes, commercial changes occurring, but there's actually a fundamental price change happening across the board in that same time frame. Unfortunately, it is coincident that there will be across the board price increases for Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365, Windows 365, and Power Platform. So the opportunity I encourage partners to seize is to understand what those changes are in price. And moreover, look back at what we're asking the partner community to do, to look back over the last 10 years of features and applications that have been added to Microsoft 365 without any price change. There are over 24 applications and 1,400 features that have been added in the last 10 years without a price change, except for exchange rate, without a price change to that particular subscription. Across areas to do with security and compliance, to do with communications and collaboration, Teams with calling, for example, to do with AI and automation, for example, Power Apps and the way in which you've got voice dictation, speech to text capabilities. All of these capabilities have come out in the last 10 years without a price change. So get on the front foot as a partner, understand what those capabilities are, understand what those features are, go and have a conversation with your client. Be open and honest about there is a price change coming, but also let me help you rationalize potentially elements in your business today where you're using, and I'm being competitive because I'm a competitive guy, potentially there's other elements of technology that compete with what Microsoft give you in this subscription. Do you need Zoom? Do you need that security product and that other security product? And by the way, that other security product, when so many security capabilities come in the box. Do you need that speech to text translation tool? Do you need these other technologies? They're all in this box, and me as your partner can give you an integrated solution. So A, understand the changes. B, communicate those changes in terms of capabilities in the product. And C, be very clear and evident about the fact that they are going to have to pay more.
The other thing I'd bring to the table too in all of this is that what I see, particularly in the smaller providers, is they start off with a price point for their services and then they seem to hold on to that forever. They don't look at a process where they would review and adjust that over time. So many people are still operating at the same charge rate they were 10 years or even longer ago, because they have this fear that if I put my prices up, then my customers will leave me. And that's really a transactional approach. I think that, again, take a step back, look at the wider economy. We know that inflation is a challenge at the moment. The price of fuel, the price of groceries, these all go up and they do impact your business. So, insurance, all of that is going to continue to increase. And if your revenue or what you charge for your services isn't increasing at least in line with that, then you are falling behind. Now, the approach that I certainly take is when I review the prices that I would charge per year, I would have a look at it and say, what value have I added to my services or my skill set that would justify, this price increase? And there are certifications, there are learning, there are attending events, building up your skill set, learning new products that you can point to and say, yes, I'm confident that I've added value. And this is the way that I add value, is I need to charge a little bit more because I am more valuable and bring that to the table. So to me, that's what I see. I think people need to not look at this as, just an increase from people like Microsoft. They should take this as an opportunity. You know what? If Microsoft are looking at increasing their prices because of the impact the economy is having, maybe I need to address that in my business as well. And generally what you find is that if the price increase obviously is within reason and it is providing value, it's not a cost, it's providing value, then if you have good customers, they'll happily pay that. And 9 times out of 10, I find that resellers basically, when they go and talk to their customers or they do increase their price, the customer says, why didn't you do it sooner? Why didn't you do it sooner? Again, you won't know until you try it. You don't obviously double your rates necessarily overnight, but I think that's what's missing in a lot of these places. They set a price initially and then they keep that forever, and that's not really doing you any favours in your own business.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think I do often meet partners who don't even tell their customers what they do for free. There's a lot of things that partners will do for a customer, and they've never articulated that they're doing those things to the customer. And the free isn't free, really. What they've been doing is using the old model of, I sold you the product and I've got margin and I'll build that service in. But that's changed as we move from upfront to ongoing. You now need to be very, I am doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing X, I'm doing security, I'm doing network management for you. And this is our fee, which includes all of those components as a service to you, including the bit. So you talked about that about 10, 15 minutes ago. And I want to reiterate and probably, back you up and say there's more than just the fact that the terms are changing and there's a bunch of new features. And by the way, me as a partner, I do this, 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 and this for you too.
And I think you're right. I think that's the, and we'll probably all have experiences with businesses that we deal with that, we perceive we are receiving things for free and that always feels good, but it is a premium product. And a very good example is, the Amazon Prime concept. So, I signed up to that back in the day so I could watch the Grand Tour. That was my sole aim of basically paying that fee. And that they've increased that price slightly over time, but now you get free delivery, you get other things, and it's like, That to me is a value. So I'm happy to pay that. And I think that's differentiation here. I think there's a big difference between partners who understand value versus people who are focused on cost. And I think the ones who are focused on value, because that's more in their control and what they can influence and what they can add, rather than pure, okay, look, I've got a product and I'm just basically not doing anything to the product and just passing it on. I think customers are smarter than that, because if that's all you're doing, they would just go somewhere else to pick that up.
Yep, and go from Woolies to Coles to IGA to get the same box of cornflakes.
And that's a super tough market, really, to be into. There's no question. And again, as I tell people, I said, if you are the local provider, Woolies and Coles, you would think, we're the top of the tree, we're the big, we're the big players. I could tell you they're petrified of someone like Amazon who comes in over the top and then bigger still. So again, it's not just the single provider that's having these challenges, it's those businesses as well. But the successful business, the successful individual does adapt. And another thing I think I'd call out too, and I'd be interested in your take on this as we begin to round up this discussion, is would you say that maybe the more successful partners are the ones who engage and talk and share and seek opinions from their peers, rather than go into their shell and be a lone gunman and trying to solve all the problems of the world themselves?
I'd agree with that, yeah. And whether they're doing that communication through social media and making people aware of the capabilities and skills and services they develop under their own brand, we applaud that at Microsoft through a motion called Co-Sell. So we'd love you to build out those sorts of stories and have them articulated either through our forums or social media forums. But secondly, the idea of what we call P2P, partner to partner, absolutely something we applaud. And again, you're quite right. The successful ones are the ones who know how to partner to partner.
And I think a very good example I see of that is the Power Platform and the Dynamics, the CRM side of an even project. I could probably do that, but I don't have the bandwidth. It's not necessarily something I'm totally passionate with when it comes to Dynamics and CRM. So again, I develop a relationship with a dedicated CRM business that focus on that will integrate, and we all work together to provide solutions for customers and everybody gets a good result. And I have no problems handing that off, but that is my delineation of what I do and don't do. And I see it as a cooperation, basically, not something that I'm competing with that individual. I think that's the real secret. I think back in the SBS days, it was a case of I do everything and get away from me sort of thing. I don't trust any of you.
Yeah.
To now it's so big that you just can't do that. It's just virtually impossible.
SPS days, native. Yes, indeed. So, you know, the database element, the SQL Server that came with Premium, you'd probably look to somebody who did the database specialty today and add an application on top of that with an accounting application or a manufacturing application. The Exchange bit that was in that box, now you look to an M365 specialist. But even within that, there might be something to do with change management or the adding of insights and learning. Gosh, I could go on. But there are so many things in that that you might want to call on a partner to help you as a partner to get the ultimately right solution for the customer.
And a good, we'll get you to give us a sign, but a quick one I would call out is obviously the forthcoming or coming out, product Viva. Viva's a big change, and it's like a lot of people still have trouble wrapping their mind around the concept of SharePoint and Teams, and now you got Viva on top of this. I think that's where engaging with a specialist or engaging with people who know that product and work with that product as a specialty, rather than trying to learn it yourself from the ground up, it's a much better bet to make that sort of investment with somebody who is your peer. And again, there could be some interchange of skills and whatever there as well. But that's, I think that's going to be another really good example of how partners go to market with a product like Viva.
Indeed.
All right, Phil. So again, why don't you perhaps bring it home for us and give us a bit of a summary, a go to market sort of message here that people can take away and action. And then if you wouldn't mind sharing any contact details or relevant resources people can take advantage of to keep up to date with all this and potentially, following what else you do out there in the Microsoft sphere.
Certainly. I'll keep it short because I'm conscious of top of the hour. Change is a challenge. Change is a constant. Adapt to survive. Adapt by adding services, becoming more like a restaurant rather than a retail outlet. There are changes afoot. If you want to know and be kept up to date on the changes that are coming out, I give you a simple answer. Shoot me an email. I was kindly going to put my email address at the end of this podcast in his post, and join my monthly online meeting, which seeks to give you some updates across the licensing, across technology, across programs, and give you some technical pointers as well. That's it, mate, in terms of my wrap, except for a huge thank you to you for the opportunity to share some thoughts today. Thank you.
Excellent. No worries. And I'll take this opportunity to thank Phil. I can hear his Outlook beeping in the background, calling him to the next meeting. So I will allow him to take leave and thank him very much for his time and all the information. Please get in contact with him about those specifics. And with all that, I'll call an end to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.